I'll be reading the scripture today. I will also be signing the scripture today. I appreciate so much the comments for unity that was used during the communion. And I don't want my signing to distract you from the concept of unity. Sign language for the deaf is simply a means of interpreting what's being said for the ones who cannot hear. And so, in a way, we are providing even greater unity with our sign language. The sign language for the deaf is unique. It's the only language that is simultaneous in the interpretation. All other languages that are verbal have to be back and forth, back and forth. So it's a unique language. But even with the different ones of us that are interpreting, we have variety. I learned my sign language from an older couple that had their sign language from the 1920s and 30s. And of course, Larry's sign language started in California, and nobody knows too much about that. And of course, Sharon is very young, and her language and interpreting is different from. So the deaf people get a lot of variety in their sign language. But today, the signing is going to be from the Old Testament, from Ecclesiastes 4, 8 verses through 12. There is a man who is all alone. He had neither son nor brother. And he worked endlessly, and he was wealthy, but he was not content with his wealth. Why am I working so hard? Why am I depriving myself from enjoyment? It's all meaningless. It's miserable. Two are better than one. Why? Because two has better for their labor. If either falls, the other can lift them up. Pity the person who falls and has no help. If two are together, they're warm, but one shivers all the time. One person is easily defeated, but two can defend against all. A rope with three can't be broken.
Thank you for the scripture reading. Kind of a sad story. Kind of a sad case study of a guy who found success. But he's like, I think maybe a word I thought of is he's a workaholic. He's a guy that says there is no end to his toil. And he's got no son, no brother. He's got no real relationships. And look, it's just like a case study. We don't really know a whole lot, but you kind of know the type. Maybe you've seen this story before. Someone who we can just guess kind of gives their life to the pursuit of wealth for their job, for their career, at the expense of friendships and relationships and those around them. Not saying that that happens with every wealthy person, but sometimes it happens. Sometimes you might know the type, someone who just, they dedicate their life to their job and they just miss out on a whole lot of relationships and a whole lot of life. And then this guy, he looks up and he just kind of realizes, all this wealth, it's not really enough. He's not content with it. And I think a lot of us kind of realize that. It doesn't matter how much you get. Doesn't matter how much you earn. It doesn't fulfill you. It didn't fulfill him. Something was still missing, even though he gets rich and probably keeps meeting goals, but he keeps realizing it's not enough. And maybe you've been there with your financial goals. You finally got the car you wanted, or finally moved into that house you were really excited about, or got that new toy you wanted. For me and my family, sometimes it's saving up for a big trip. We finally get that trip we wanted. And then you might kind of look back and say, well, that was cool. I'm really glad I accomplished this. But now it's kind of on to the next thing. I'm still not fulfilled. I still don't have it all. There's still something empty, still something missing. And I think we do that with wealth. We think, when I get X amount of money, I'll finally be content. But then we just keep wanting more. Because whatever we got, whatever our goal was, it still didn't satisfy that need within us. Because it's really just never enough money. There's never enough. So this guy in this case study eventually asks, what am I doing all this for? What is this about? I've got all this wealth. I've got all these nice things, but no one to enjoy it with. I have all this wealth, but I have no one to share it with, no one to use this wealth to bless. Who am I doing this for? Because he kind of realizes it's not that great if you don't have someone to share it with. And really the answer is, he's doing it for himself. And if you live life for yourself, you're eventually going to discover that that's pretty empty. You're eventually going to feel lacking. It's actually eventually going to be pretty sad and pretty unfulfilling. This is a sad story. A selfish life is an empty life. You'll eventually discover that. And there's secular studies on people kind of like our guy in this study who have dedicated their life to work. They're workaholics. They're making all this money. And they end up sad when it's at the expense of friendships and relationships. They end up sad. It's relationships that make us feel mentally healthy and happy. And like Blair was saying, there's so much isolation. And there's a strong correlation between social isolation and depression. Strong correlation. There was this movie back, those of you who are like around 40 probably remember this movie. There's the empty rich man we were talking about. Blank Check. Y'all remember this movie? It was in 1994. A lot of people probably watched it. It was a really silly movie starring some like Macaulay Culkin wannabe. You know, I don't know who this kid is. If you remember the story, I'm just going to refresh you. It's some kid who gets a blank check and he finds a way to forge it and he becomes like a multimillionaire. And I'm not saying go watch the movie. It's not great, okay? Like, I think the little headline here says, if you loved Home Alone, you'll love Blank Check. No, you won't. Don't do that. In fact, I'm gonna tell you about it. I'm going to ruin it for you so you don't watch it. I'm going to save you an hour and 35 minutes of your life if you haven't seen it yet. But I think a lot of us saw it when we were kids. So there's this 11-year-old kid. He gets rich. He gets a mansion and lives in it by himself. He gets all these toys. He has a limo, like all the things like a kid could never even imagine having all this wealth. But eventually, here's where the spoiler comes in. Near the end of the movie, he has the same realization the empty rich man has in our case study. He's sitting in, he's in one of those like bouncy houses. He has his own bouncy house and he's got those big boxing gloves, but nobody to box. He's got no friends to, he's got no one to race in his go-karts. He's got no one to enjoy all of these awesome things he has. And he kind of realizes like, man, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And I think a lot of times in our pursuit of wealth, we eventually get there. Oh, this didn't answer all my problems. This isn't the ultimate happiness that I thought it would bring. And so even as a kid, while it's not a funny or a great movie at all, I do remember that little lesson. I do remember, no, that really is important. Even now, I realize there's so many things that are just richer and better with people. Even kind of something I've realized recently is I'm trying to not watch comedy movies or shows by myself. So whenever I do, one, it feels weird laughing by yourself. Like my son laughed by himself the other day with the rest of the family in the room. We were like, man, what a weirdo. What's he laughing at? You know? But it's a lot more fun to laugh with people. And a lot of the funny things I see in a show that I'm watching by myself, I think, oh, someone else would, you know, my wife or my daughter, they would have thought that was really funny. I want to laugh with people. Have any of y'all ever been to a live comedian? Have you ever seen the live comedian and then watched them on Netflix? For some reason, it is funnier live, right? Would y'all agree? You laugh more live. It is way different. Like really, almost strangely different. I laugh so much more. And I think it's for two reasons. One, you feel more connected with the speaker when you're there in person. Two, you're laughing with people. It's a shared experience. You ever laugh just because someone else is laughing? That's fun. That's joyful. I love that. So you're laughing with people. It's a shared experience. And just everything is better together. Everything. And that's part of the message of this text. And that's kind of what this kid in blank check is learning. Wealth and having all these cool things, it sure is great. But without rich relationships to share it with, you're going to still feel empty. Relationships are more important than wealth. Relationships are more important than wealth. And it's really something we have to hear a whole lot, right? Because I think some people are still like, nah, I still want to be rich. We need stories like these and reminders because sometimes we get tunnel vision and our values get messed up and we make our life about the pursuit of wealth when it should really be about the pursuit of God and the pursuit of relationships. That stuff's more important. And I don't want to say you can't have wealth in relationships. It's not an either or. You can't have both, but sometimes we make the pursuit our main goal. And so our text gives a few ways that relationships are really important. One, it says two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. Working together gets more done, right? You get the job done twice as fast when you have people there to help you out. When I was reading this, I was thinking about like group projects at work or at school. How many of you like group projects? How many of you like group work? You weird extroverts. In school, no, that's cool. I like that. I'm glad you're that way. For me, I don't feel that way. For me at school, I remember as soon as the teacher says we're going to do a group project or group work, I just, oh, please, no. That, because automatically, here's where my mind goes. Well, that sounds socially awkward. And then I start thinking, oh, well, you know, there's either I'm going to be pulling the weight for the slackers, or maybe I'm going to be with that overbearing person who it's going to be their way and that's it. Maybe I'm going to be with the annoying kid. Like, it is going to be difficult. And so whenever I hear group work, my mind goes to, I would much rather do this on my own. I won't make you raise your hands, but I bet some of you feel that way. Some of you are in that, but I would just rather do this by myself. I think that a lot. And if you have that mindset with work, with life, with relationships, this message is for you. Because I think sometimes we default that way. I would much rather do this myself. And I think a lot of times people have this idea with church and faith. You probably have talked to the type of person. Some people do it like with Bible study. I don't want to hear what all these other people have to say about the scripture. I just want to go there. I want to read it myself. And underneath that, there might even be a little attitude that says, well, I know better than everyone else anyway. And, we've talked about it in class, and we're going to unpack it a little bit more. But studying the word together is important. It is important. Or some people think, like, I don't like the church telling me what to do or how to live. I can just read the Bible and pray on my own. I don't need all that. I don't need that community. And I understand the mindset, and I know people that feel that way. It may have been hurt by community before, but when you are baptized into Christ, you are also baptized into the church. And that would be you're a pretty anemic Christian if you're doing it's great. I'm glad you're studying the Bible. I'm glad you're praying. But if you are being a Christian without other Christians, you're missing out on something very important. It's very anemic. And then I think there's also some people who may feel that way, but still come to church. I don't really need the church. Oh, I really just, it's about the Bible and studying scripture by myself. But, you know, I'll still go. I'll punch my card. You know, I'll go in there and I'll sit there. But I'm not going to engage too much with community. And again, I think a lot of people who feel that way, sometimes they've been hurt. Sometimes it's been too hard. Sometimes they've been burned. And if you feel that way, I'm sorry, and I'm glad you're coming and sitting in the pew. But my prayer and my hope is that we get more engagement, that you plug in more with the community, because there is so much value in community, even when it's hard. It will make you better. It will help you. You will find more joy, and your life will be richer when you can really engage, when you really find your people in that community. Good community, good friends, good partners. Those are all out there for you. I believe that. But you may trudge through some difficult things to get there. I remember my junior year of high school, we took chemistry, and it was like an infamously hard class. And at the beginning of the year, they're assigning lab partners. And my lab partner, and he's announcing who it is, and my lab partner was Marcos. And as soon as they say Brady and Marcos are together, people almost laugh, and I saw, like, oh, no. Because Marcos is a new kid from Mexico, and he doesn't speak English. And he can do a few words, but his verbs are kind of switched around, real hard to communicate with, and it's like, oh, great. So I'm going to have to just pull this kid around, and I'm going to have to do everything for him. But that year, as I worked with Marcos, I figured out, one, he was picking up on English. He was figuring it out pretty quick. Marcos was the smartest kid in the class. And it really actually started to bother me because some people, out of ignorance, out of not knowing and making assumptions, thought Marcos wasn't smart just because he couldn't speak English well. But turns out Marcos was the smartest kid in the class, and guess who was making the best grades? Because Marcos was his partner. Yeah, worked out well. And he also turned out to be a great guy. And so I think about that, and I think one of the things that also keeps us from community is prejudgment. Oh, I already know what this person's like, or I already have my idea set about these people, and I don't really want to engage with them. And it was nice that I was kind of forced to sit there and get to know him. Because he was really smart, great guy, really helpful. Sometimes you need that. Sometimes to build community, it's got to be a little awkward for a little bit. It's got to be hard for a little bit. And I've seen that as a youth minister so much, even in my own experience. I remember moving to San Angelo in a new town and going to church and being real uncomfortable. Going to youth group and being really shy, really like not totally feeling the vibe. But there was a bunch of kids there in that youth group who were really kind to me and gave me time and were patient with me. And eventually I could start feeling more like myself. And eventually I became part of that group. But it took time and it was difficult and it was awkward. And so I think that's really important for some people who have these misgivings or are nervous about community. You got to be willing to do the time. You got to be willing to make some effort. Sometimes it happens easily, right? Sometimes getting involved in the community just plugs right in, but other times it takes time. And so I really want to, like, a lot of you out there who might have some misgivings about community, I'm asking you to give us some time and give us some effort, because I do believe it is really worth it. Look at some other examples that he uses here. Verse 10, it says, when one of them falls, you can help him up. And probably referencing like when you travel, if you're traveling alone, you fall in a pit, you're stuck, you can't get out. If you're there with somebody that can help pull you out. I know everybody's probably been in some place in their life where they've had to call a friend to just bail them out. And I mean, I'm just looking out here at so many friends who I've had to be like, okay, I know who to call in this situation. I know who's going to show up for me here. I've had tons of y'all do that for me. And man, that's a great feeling to have a friend that you know, if I call this person, they will drop what they are doing and they will show up. Man, that's a good thing to have. Man, that's a blessing. To live well in community, though, sometimes means laying down pride and asking for help. Admitting you need help. A lot of us have a hard time with that. A lot of us have a hard time reaching out to people and saying, hey, I need a bailout. And so I think it's important to ask for help. Please ask the church for help if you need something. I'm not saying we can grant wishes, but if you have a need, we can maybe help. Don't be afraid to ask the church for help. But really the mindset of this whole text is in God's kingdom, there's really no place for individualism, and there's really no place for self-reliance. As much as we want to be self-made and do it on our own and say, I got this, as Christians, we kind of admit, I don't got this. I need Jesus, and I need his community, and sometimes I'm going to need help, and I'm not going to be too prideful to ask for it. We need help.